I knew that I would not. So good, so good, I got a year. Oh, I feel nice, a sugar and spice. I feel nice, a sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, the man who knows almost a lot of things.
Something. Man, it's, I'm supposed to put that little asterisk there
and then
fill in the fine print. But
the lawyers are making this deal.
All right, so now you're just headlining it. Okay. He doesn't know that much. As I said last time,
offer not valid in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. I know an awful lot about a narrow range of things. That's the best way to put it. But I'm just proud to be here, so
are
thank you.
You.
Oh,
are
yeah, you so. Bet.
Did you like the map I sent you about the life expectancy?
Oh, man. It really hit home, buddy. I mean, that was my parents married when they were in their mid-teens, and they both died in the early 70s.
Yeah.
So it was a
map of where people live to be, you know, over or under 75 years old. And like all of these maps, it was
pretty much all of West Virginia.
The Confederacy
and
West Virginia.
And then just keep going down.
That hit your family pretty
dead
on.
My mother
no pun intended.
My mother was 15 when I was conceived.
Yeah.
And I was a 9-pound preemie. Figure that one out.
He's 2 months premature.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Well, that was the
fashion at the times, Kitty Witties.
A lot of 7-month babies.
So, they were in high. My mother dropped out of high school.
Yeah.
My mother never finished high school. Neither did my dad.
But that was a subject line I put on there.
Yeah.
It showed how people died early, and I said that's why they got married when they're 14.
Exactly. You got to get it done fast. It's like living in the Middle Ages or something. You know. Actually, to tell you the truth, you know, when I read a book about the past, I read something like, you know, I was reading those. What was her name? She wrote those things about Henry VIII and Thomas Cromwell. Hillary Mantel. They were made into a series on PBS. One of the books was Bring Up the Bodies and some of the others. And I was reading that, and I was reading about their lives. And, you know, she grew up in a very poor area of Yorkshire, and she's written some excellent short story memoirs about her life there. And I was thinking that, you know, when you think about what it was like to live in the Renaissance or the Middle Ages or whatever, it's just kind of like find the poorest place you can in the United States, and it's kind of like that. You know, you get sick, you probably are going to die, or you're going to have something disfiguring that's going to, you're just going to walk around with it, you know, not really think, well, that's the way it goes, you know, and, you know, no sanitation and everything. That was kind of the way.
Or the doctors would kill you.
Yeah, or God forbid, yeah. Thomas Jefferson, one of my favorite Thomas Jefferson quotes is, I've never seen a group of doctors together talking to a patient without buzzards flying overhead. I think he wrote that in like 1801 or something. That's probably just about right. They had just bled Washington to death 2 years ago.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Well, they didn't like wash their hands or anything.
No, they had no idea they were little critters. Yeah. Some people don't believe in them now. I mean, you know, that whole...
Who's that?
Yeah, that old COVID thing. What's that? That's, you can't see them. They're no-see-em, so they must not be real.
Yeah, no, that was a plot by the government to get us to comply with things.
And, it's funny that they can believe in a big hairy guy in the sky that determines their destiny, but for some reason the idea of little critters are trying to eat them never really occurs to anybody. Oh, well, I guess I'm just one of those liberal elites.
How much pot did you smoke before you came in here? I could have a whole universe in my thumb.
That is a form of meditation for me, Mel. Sometimes when I'm thinking about it, I think about all the things that are living in my body.
Yeah.
And that's kind of comforting. I like the idea of being an ecosystem for a bunch of things. As long as they're not mean, you know, things.
Yeah,
but
I mean, you know. Just the things in your eyebrows.
Gut
and
bacteria
stuff,
and little mites and things. It's like, I'm like a cruise ship. Hopefully slightly more sanitary.
Only less E. coli.
Not as much on the E. coli.
So your favorite president and mine.
Yes.
Donald the genius Trump.
Donald Jessica Trump.
Was up in La Crosse last night.
Oh, was he really?
And he held a town hall meeting in La Crosse.
I'm sure that was edifying.
Yeah, it's like, how come they don't make special export here anymore? The happy hours aren't as good as they used to be.
I was complaining bitterly about something the other day, and I turned to companion, and I said, and don't get me started on those low-flow toilets. We both just burst out laughing. That's the punchline.
The worst is when a shark sticks its head up in one of those low-flow toilets, because you can't get it down.
No, it's impossible.
You flush 10, 20 times, and that shark is still there.
You know that
You just got to throw a battery at it.
Yeah, you know that comes out of a story, right? I mean, he's had a giant presidential-sized dump or something, and it just wouldn't go down.
15 times.
He's been traumatized by that.
Well, that's like he's obsessed with bacon, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I swear that they were just out of bacon at Mar-a-Lago one day, and it, as you say, traumatized him. But
he's a sensitive flower. Yeah.
But he showed up in La Crosse.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
And
on him.
On his way there, they told him they told him it was going to be a town hall meeting, and he said, "Oh, it is? I thought it was a speech." So he's well prepared as usual.
Yeah, right.
And he shows up, and then he tells the audience, "I thought this was going to be a speech. I got a great speech for you here."
That'll be a first.
Yeah. But here's just like a little 1 second synopsis of it.
It's okay.
Trump duly ran through a recitation of his greatest hits, insisting untruthfully that undocumented immigrants took 107% of all new jobs created last month.
You know, I have to say, I have a lot of respect for those immigrants because they're taking an impossible percent.
Well, they're hard workers.
Even the laws of math don't apply to them. I mean, that's amazing.
When they took 100.
Those are people that can do.
Took 107% of all new jobs. These are people coming here with no social security cards, IDs, no money, and they're still able to take 107% of all the new jobs.
I'd say let them have it.
Yeah.
If they can do that, good on them.
So the immigrants took 107% of all new jobs created last month, and that Americans have stopped eating bacon thanks to inflation. That'll be the day when Americans stop eating bacon.
I don't eat bacon anyway.
Well, I know, but Americans do.
Okay. So. Oh, yeah. Okay, I forgot.
Red America does.
Yeah. The real America.
He said bacon's gone up like 4 or 5 times, like 400 or 500%.
Inflation is going down.
I know.
It's just ridiculous.
So, yeah. I love the 107%.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
That's one of these, you probably know the terms for this, but it's what. If you want to try to sound like you're an authority figure, you use this precision.
Yes, false precision.
This is false precision. It's 93.379%.
Yeah, I just made that up, but it sounds like I didn't.
Yeah.
I was thinking of him the other morning. He's the carnival barker, right?
Sure.
And he's outside the tent, and he goes, "Come on in, see the mermaid, see the mermaid." And then the people go in and say, "I don't see any mermaid." "Well, that's on you, buddy. I didn't say there was one. I said you'd see one." And some people do see the mermaid. That's the point.
Then they come out.
There's no mermaid there, but they go, "Oh, yeah, that was a mermaid.
That was a cool mermaid."
Yeah, you should go in and see it. Because no one's going to say that when they paid the entrance price to go in and see the mermaid,
I really got screwed there.
That I was duped.
Yeah.
So they all come out of the tent and say, "Oh, yeah, there's a mermaid."
A pretty cool mermaid there. Yeah. You should give them your nickel and go look at it.
Go right in there, yeah.
I was at the Milwaukee Zoo one time, and there was like a bunch of people gathered around an empty exhibit, and they were just staring at it, and they were just all fascinated by it. And I took a picture of it. It's a great picture of it. People looking at an empty
box. The no-see-um, right. Well, speaking of Donald Trump, there was a fascinating article in this week's New York Times, and it's in a section I don't usually read, which is the Thursday Style section. But I was just paging through it, and I happened to find this article about, of course, Donald's obsession with people's looks. And I think we all know that. I mean, he's super obsessed with Kamala Harris, interestingly enough. And he actually thinks that she's attractive. He's not dissing her. He thinks that she said that she looked better than Sophia Loren. Those of you who are 500 years old remember who that is. And Mona Lisa, I remember her well. And even his wife. Now, you got to love what Melania has to put up with, right? I mean, he said, oh, yeah, the woman that's running against me in this campaign is more attractive than my wife. But what was really interesting is that he said that he was much better looking than her.
Yeah.
Than Kamala. And we all heard that. But if you think about this from the law of transitivity, that means he thinks he's better looking than Melania is, which is really, and Sophia Loren. Mm. But the really interesting thing right now is, I don't know what's happening to him. I mean, he's kind of unraveling, but this was an unexpected form of unraveling. He started to talk about handsome guys, guys that strike him as being incredibly handsome. He was describing a guy that was a negotiator sent by the president of Mexico. And here's a direct quote. He sent me this very handsome guy. Very good. So handsome. So beautifully dressed. He was a handsome devil. There's a whole bunch of men, apparently, that he's been lavishing praise on for their looks. And he's mentioned, of course, Cary Grant. Again, those of you who are 500 years old remember him. And the former prime minister of Pakistan, unusual choice, Imran Khan. Secret Service, he's talking about them. And then apparently he met a group of pilots at one point, which he described as the most handsome human beings I've ever seen. And, okay, listen to this. It sounds like he's talking to his therapist here, okay? I guess that's what his audience is. He says, it's not my thing, but they are handsome. Not my thing, not even a little bit, which I'm a little worried about the denials here. But they are handsome. Central casting. Better looking than Tom Cruise. Taller. Thanks, Tom Cruise.
Get that dig in.
Tom Cruise is like, I'm shaking his head. So apparently, I don't know, I guess he's walking on the wild side now. I'm not sure what exactly is happening, but as he ages, he's starting to appreciate the beauty of men.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you lose testosterone as you get older.
Is that what it is? Okay.
So you get kind of, I don't know, everything just kind of blends together. After
a while. They're all young. Yeah. You know, there are no wrinkles. You know.
Yeah.
They all look good. Well, men, women, inanimate objects.
He's always been like that. In his first term, he hired some people because they looked the part, especially some of the generals. He wanted a general who looked like a general. He wanted
that's how we got hired here.
Yeah. You look perfect for radio.
Yeah, exactly. The high standard.
Plus, I don't know if he does this anymore, but he used to like having a fat guy around.
Oh, yeah.
And because that's like having like his court gesture, because then he would make fun of them.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like a deflection because he could sit there and eat like 9 Big Macs and then make fun of the fat guy.
Right.
And that's why he got along with Chris Christie for a while until Christie kind of got tired of it.
We're back to Hilary Mantel, Henry VIII. Dance, dwarves, dance.
Laugh at the fat man.
I mean, he's so atavistic. You have to laugh. I mean, it's just like, oh my God.
Have you seen any of the things where J.D. Vance is trying to like relate to human beings?
To the humans, yeah.
He was like in a donut shop trying to order donuts, and it was just...
What happened?
It's just like really awkward. It's hard. You have to see it, but it's just like...
I thought he was a good old boy.
No, he's a fake good old boy.
Oh, poor
thing. So
he was a sad child.
He was trying to...
I read his book. He was a sad child.
He was trying to like make small talk with the woman waiting on him, and he said, I'm running for vice president. She goes, okay.
And I'm running for empress, so what do you want for donuts?
And then he didn't quite know how to order. He goes, I don't know, sprinkles or something. What, you know, so maybe something good. I don't know.
Something good. Yeah.
I don't know.
Nothing with ants on it.
Yeah, but and then he was talking to an owner of a. See, they sent him to these small businesses to show, you know, how much Republicans love the small business people.
Yeah.
And he went to a deli in Kenosha. And he was talking to the owner of the deli, and he was trying to make, you know, trying to joke with the human.
Sure. And I got a book right here that tells me how to do it.
And he said, do you have anything really bad? Because then I can give it to the press corps.
Thud.
Yeah. I mean, that's bad on so many layers. First of all, it's just like...
It's gratuitous.
It's mean.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like when, I forget the exact thing, but a reporter asked him a question and he goes, oh, what makes you smile? And he said, well, stupid questions like that. And but I mean, so it's mean-spirited, but also it's telling this guy who's running his little business that what do you have here that's crappy? You know, you have any like really like rancid food here that I can, you know, because it looks like kind of a crappy store you got here.
Well, I got some out back, but you had to fight with the raccoons, which he probably could do.
Yeah, but it's always punching down. That's the right wing humor, you know.
Yep. So. Yep. You bet. Hey, speaking of right wing humor, did you hear that the GOP has a new video out to set the record straight?
No.
On the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Oh my God.
I watched that one in real time, as many people did as it was happening. A friend called me and said, "Hey, you got to check out what's going on TV." And when I saw that Confederate flag go through the U.S. Capitol, I started to tear up. I was like, "This is this is a day. This is a day we can never forget."
The thing that really got me were the guys walking around with all the zip ties.
Yeah,
because there's only one reason they wanted those.
Right,
and that creeped me out.
Yeah. So apparently this newly released video about the January 6th attack on the Capitol is blaming Nancy Pelosi for the riot. And they're saying that in this, she's shown on the day of the riot, venting her rage about the rampage of the Capitol, criticizing officials for failing to anticipate and prevent it. And
why didn't you stop us from trying to overthrow the government? It's your fault.
Yeah. She says she feels bad in the video, and she probably did, because people who are civilized and considerate often take blame upon themselves when they don't do what they ought. But she said, "Who thought that people would do this?" I mean, she was just amazed and overwhelmed by the fact that that people were actually doing this sort of thing, and nobody really would have guessed that this, of course, before then would have taken place. So, of course, the fact of the matter is that the former speaker, was not solely responsible for the security of the Capitol. The speaker wields a lot of authority. But security's job of the Capitol Police, and that's controlled by a board that includes one security official appointed by the speaker and one appointed by the Senate leader. And guess who the Senate leader was at that time?
Who's that?
Mitch McConnell.
Mm.
So a spokesperson for Ms. Pelosi says numerous independent fact checkers have confirmed again and again that Speaker Pelosi did not plan her own assassination on January 6th. Nice reply, I thought.
Well, like I said, that's the creepy thing. I mean, if they saw her, they would have grabbed her.
Yeah, of course they would.
And
Nancy! You know, they were saying little sing-songy voices.
Right, and she was, you know, close to, I don't know how old she was at that time, but she was close to 90, 80, you know, in her 80s at that point.
She's no spring chicken.
No, I mean, you know, that you could seriously mess somebody up just by grabbing
her. Well, the guy pooped on her desk.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, remember that guy.
Yeah, so, well, they were looking for her. They were looking for AOC. Yeah. And
it was very targeted.
And it was, you know... And all you need to know about Trump's involvement is that people were attacking the Capitol, and they did not take the president to a secure location.
Yeah.
He just stayed and watched it like he was watching the Super Bowl or something.
Sure.
And earlier in the day, they told Trump that when they were all gathering in this park, they said there were guys up in the trees with guns. And Trump said, "Well, they're not after me."
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yep. Of course, as we all know, and for those who are regular listeners, our audience, you're probably well aware of all these things already. Right now, they're doing it in a different way, which is, of course, in Georgia and in Texas and other places, they're trying to basically reintroduce Jim Crow. And just this week, Democrats in Georgia sued the state election board, saying that the measures that they approved to alter the election certification process were illegal. And basically, they had given local officials, notably, and of course, this was going to work in counties where the Republicans were a majority, it gave the local officials the right to not count the votes if they had any reasonable objections. And of course, those were very ill-defined. So this Georgia election board had been kind of taken over by the MAGA Republicans. And... this has been a big deal. They've been more and more of these unusual rules.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, down in Texas, you probably also heard that they have a whole little unit set up by the Texas Attorney General to try to suppress the vote there. The governor of Texas, a guy by the name of Greg Abbott, said that more than 1.1 million voters had been purged from the list of eligible voters in the last 3 years. when there was an election integrity bill signed into law. So they're proud. They're basically removing large numbers of people from the voting rolls. They said that a number of non-citizens, possible non-citizens, were removed from the voting rolls. But the 1 million number, the number that they claim that were non-citizens, was about 6,000. So people in Texas are also kind of up in arms. There's a be good to know, nice to know that there's a pushback there among activists as well.
Well, in Georgia, they're seeing registrations just go through the roof. I mean, there's a ton of enthusiasm to get registered to vote. So they need to do something to counter that because we can't have people voting.
Well, you can't have those people voting.
Yeah, well, those people.
I mean, that's the whole Jim Crow component. Yeah. The minute, you know, supervision over the election process ended by the ruling of the Supreme Court and a few years ago, then, of course, all the southern states said, hey, that means we're back to the end of Reconstruction, so let's get going here.
Let's get the old Wayback Machine.
Exactly.
So last night, Kamala Harris did an interview, and Governor Walz was there too, with the CNN.
Yeah.
Because the mainstream media has been complaining for a while that she won't sit down and do interviews and, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And so she did it. They kept asking her, like, about these Republican talking points. And, and they even asked her about the comment Trump had about her, how she turned black.
Yeah.
And the interviewer said, what are your thoughts on that? Or something like that. And Kamala Harris said that, it's just the same old garbage. Next question. And the interviewer said, is that all? She goes, that's all. So, so that was great. That was like okay. Yeah. That was like a big screw you. It's like we're not gonna talk about this old racist garbage.
Well, he just reposted too a bunch of stuff on his social media site.
It's some horrible stuff.
Crude remarks and things about her sex and sexuality and so on.
Right.
So whatever. But I mean, this is the thing. Okay, right. Whatever. They don't got much, you know? They just don't. And that's how they have to lie continuously and launch these personal attacks and so on. I mean, the thing about it is, everyone's like, well, Kamala needs to step up and give an interview. Well, have you listened to anything that's come out of the other guy's mouth when he has an interview?
Right.
The double standard is just so incredible.
And he doesn't answer questions. I mean, they'll ask him a question. Well, first of all, it's a very controlled thing. I mean, he only goes to, you know, Fox or Newsmax or something like that. Yeah. But even then, you know, they'll ask him about his economic policies, and he starts ranting about, you know, low-flow toilets or something.
Yeah,
and,
so. The standard will always
be
different.
And bacon, of course.
Bacon.
Maybe Kevin Bacon did something to tick him off.
That could well be.
Yeah. You know, got mad at
he's
him.
He's good-looking, but not that good-looking.
Him and, you know, Hannibal Lecter, you know, dissed him or something.
Yeah. Is he still on about Hannibal Lecter? Is that still
I don't know. I haven't heard about
part of the
that.
Repertoire.
I haven't heard about that for a while. So
he was going off on that for quite a while.
But and then he'd kind of double down on it because people would criticize him, and he said, "Well, they're criticizing me for talking about Hannibal Lecter, so let me talk about Hannibal Lecter for another 10 minutes."
Yeah,
great guy. And but they've always been, you know, contentious elections.
Sure.
And what this election is missing is a good old campaign song.
Okay.
And I found a great one here.
Excellent.
I shared this with you the other day.
Yes.
And we're going to share it with the listeners now. So I'm going to get James down here. And here's probably my favorite presidential campaign song ever.
There we go.
I'll leave our mics open so we can comment.
The time has come, the fight is on. We've picked the man to run for president. Ohio sent our noble, worthy son. The man we need, the man to lead our strong and mighty craft through storm at sea to victory. It's William Howard Taft. Get on a raft with Taft, get on the winning boat. The man worthwhile with a friendly smile will get the honest vote. He'll save the country, sure, boys, from Bryanhurst and Graft. So all join in, we're sure to win. Get on a raft with Taft.
Okay. I'm not getting on any raft without Howard Taft.
I just want to note that this was after the Titanic sank, so they might have had, it was the same year, so this might have had a very special resonance for people.
You know? I was thinking about that with Kate Winslet on the door Howard Taft comes swimming along. And goes, hey, you got room up in the door?
Yeah. It's like, no, and the walruses have to stay away too.
Get on the raft with Dad. Good thing his name wasn't Bass or something.
Yeah. Well, that is a lovely
isn't that a nice song?
Theme. I appreciate that.
Simpler times.
They were simpler times. I had the enjoyment, as I was sharing with you before the show, of watching the first press conference with one of our lesser known but interesting presidents to me, just because of his sheer banality, Gerald R. Ford. And you've actually run sometimes at the beginning of the show, in the intro, his famous comments after Nixon resigned. Well, that was 50 years ago, kiddiewitties, 50 years ago exactly. And he gave his first press conference on Thursday, the 29th of August, 1974. And back in the day, I was looking it up on the New York Times archive, and the New York Times was the paper of record, and they would actually reprint the entire transcript of the press conference. And then I watched it. He started with a joke that was so classic of the time. Apparently, there was some confusion at the White House as to who was having their press conference first. Because, again, a little historical background, Gerald Ford had a very interesting wife. She was a very admired figure for many years in her own right. And Betty Ford was her name, of course. And there was a confusion about whether he was having a press conference or she was having a press conference first. And so they had scheduled it, and she had one really close. And so her staff decided to move it after the president had his. And so he started with a joke that just sounds, it's just so like 50 years ago. He said, there was some confusion about whether, you know, who was going to go first. But Betty very kindly agreed that, you know, I would go first. And she's happy with that. But I will be making my breakfast, lunch and dinner for the next week. You know, it's like, OK, they live in the White House. You know, like, I seriously doubt she went.
Betty hasn't touched an egg
in 30 years. I mean, it's just, I was like, OK, whatever. But it was not. I always had a little level of fondness for him, because you have to think that if you're in a relationship with someone who was as independent and free thinking as she was, that he couldn't have been all bad.
Yeah. So.
And of course, people were just happy that they didn't have you know who up there snarling at them
to kick around.
Yeah, he got a little surly towards the end. Yeah. So.
Well, we don't like that.
Yeah, we don't like that.
So, but there's a great picture of Betty Ford in the last day they were in the White House. Mm-hmm. And she's just celebrating. You can tell, I think she was just feeling liberated.
She's
standing on the table in the White House with this big grin on her face. And this is after she quit drinking.
I'm out of here. Yeah, right.
So it's a wonderful picture.
Yeah,
she
excellent.
Just looks so happy.
Yeah.
Oh.
You want to mention that we do have a choice of people to vote for. I hope you will keep in mind when you go to the polls to vote that we have a system in which many people can run, but only one person gets to win. And it's usually one of the people in the top two, because we don't have any way of proportionally counting the votes of the other candidates or nor do we even have runoffs. You know, so, for example, Hillary Clinton can get, you know, basically, in the state could get knocked out of winning the state, and the other guy win by only a plurality, and you know, but they win the state anyway. So no runoffs. But we do now have Cornel West on the ballot here in Wisconsin, and we have old Worm Brain himself, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Is on there, and Jill Stein is also on the, as she was back in 2016. So they're all on the ballot again. So make your choices and take your chances.
I think we've got a constitutional amendment, too, that would make it illegal for non-citizens to vote.
Oh, dear.
Which is already...
Well, I mean,
illegal.
It's already illegal, but I assume that means they'll use some kind of... enforcement and
draconian.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about these kinds of things is like, why are you drawing attention to this issue, A? And B, what are you going to do as a result if this passes? Again, if it's already illegal, why do this?
So it's just to scare people. Brown people are coming here and they're voting and, you know, illegally.
Breathing.
We can't get anybody to come out and vote anyway. Yeah, I mean, you know, well, we can in Wisconsin, but a lot of places are trying to drag people out to get them to vote.
Oh, you're mentioning Governor Walz. He's going to be in Milwaukee coming up, I think, on Labor Day, if I'm not mistaken. He and he'll be giving
tips on keeping crabgrass out of your yard.
He and his spouse Gwen Walz will be there on Monday, and we don't have any more details right now, but you know, Wisconsin, we're getting a lot of love right now.
Yeah,
we really are.
We're one of like the three states that count this year.
Yeah, yeah. Only to 10.
So, hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org, or you could be listening in the future because we put our show and all of our shows up on the archives page, and you can listen whenever you want. And I urge you to get the WORT app. It's free, and that helps you. It's really easy to listen live and listen to the archive stuff with the app. And also, we're available on Spotify and Apple Pods.
Where aren't we available? In your dreams.
Wherever they sell bacon, I think, yeah, is the problem.
Exactly. We're very no bacon on this show. We take the hard stance.
That's right.
So, you're a vegetarian, and I just don't like bacon.
Yeah. I never liked bacon. I never quite got the love affair with it.
Yeah.
But, it was just
well,
kind of
crispy.
Kind of fatty. And yeah. I know. But yeah. Anyway. But anyway, Mindless Minion.
To get you off track there.
Mindless Minion D-Cube does the
yes, thank
the,
you,
the file management. He's one of our pals, one of our the members of the Mel and Floyd family here.
Yeah.
So, but
the Mel and Floyd circus troupe.
So, all right, we're going to take a break and play some announcements, and then we're going to come back with...
Google says it's resolved AI's depiction of white people, because we need to depict more white people.
And what do we have here? Sloth fever is running rampant. Well, not running. But,
loping slowly.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Dane Dances, a free family-friendly event on the Monona Terrace rooftop every Friday evening in August. This week features Aniba and the Soul Stars at 6 p.m. and Revolu Group at 8 p.m. Carry-in chairs, blankets, and baskets are permitted. No carry-in alcohol. More information on the Dane Dances concert series is available at danedances.org.
And we're back.
So this report was released by investigators this week about Thomas Crooks. That was the late Thomas Crooks, that was the would-be assassin who was killed by a Secret Service sniper. And what they found is that his choice of Donald Trump was, it seems at least, kind of random. He'd been interested in political violence since at least 2019, but he only narrowed his focus to Mr. Trump. He was just kind of like, I just want to shoot somebody, after the announcement of the rally that, of course, was held in Butler, Pennsylvania. They looked at some of his messages to himself and some other things that he told people and so on. He was a very intelligent person, apparently 20-year-old from Bethel Park, Pennsylvania. But he was socially isolated and had concerns about his own mental health. More importantly, he had access to his father's collection of firearms, all of which were, unfortunately, this is the state we live in, country we live in, legally obtained. There's been a lot of crazy going on out there. There's a Representative Clay Higgins, neo-fascist from the former Confederacy, who he's on a task force, claimed that the FBI had, quote, cleaned up biological evidence from the rooftop, whatever that means. And he released his body to the they released his body to the family too quickly. But FBI said Mr. Crook's body was turned over to the Butler County State and Butler County State and federal authorities, and toxicology showed no traces of alcohol or illicit drugs, but he was apparently having mental health issues. So at any rate, again, something that might have expressed itself in a very different way if not for the ready access to firearms.
Switching subjects here pretty radically. Male fruit flies will become oblivious to physical danger as they become more engaged in courtship and sex.
Oh, we all know about that. It's not just the fruit flies.
Yeah, researchers at the University of Birmingham have shown that pursuit of a coveted reward, in this case, a female fly.
Oh, yeah.
And who doesn't like that?
Oh, yeah.
Will cause a male fruit
fly
to ignore threats such as, look at those wings on her.
Yep.
A male fruit fly will ignore threats such as predators.
Yeah.
And the team was able to show for the first time the neural networks of the fly's brain that direct this decision-making process revealed the neurotransmitter dopamine has a leading role to play.
Yep.
So the fly pursues his courtship, and when the
I love that they use that word.
The courtship. I want to go out to dinner.
Want to hold three hands.
There's a rotting carcass over here.
Yeah, right. I've been on dates like that.
I love
the rotting carcass restaurant.
I'm surprised that didn't last longer.
Yeah. Well, it was out in the sun too long, is what I thought.
I was watching some show the other day, and they made a joke. It was St. Patrick's Day, and somebody was digging into a big plate of, like, corned beef and cabbage. He goes, you know, you never see any Irish restaurants. Good point.
Well, I had a chance to have haggis when Companion and I were in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah, but we didn't do it because, again, we were only basically out and about for 3 days because of COVID. And I want to mention that to people, by the way. There's CDC is telling people, you know, I know that no one pays attention or thinks it's real or thinks that they're going to get it. And again, I don't want anyone sending me a message, but I didn't get a very bad case. But still, it's up. It's going up. And so they're telling people when you're traveling abroad, in particular, if you have late summer travel plans, you really, really should be wearing a mask. Put a mask on when you're in the airport. Put a mask on when you're on the plane. And unlike Companion and I, when you get off the plane and you get onto the little tram that goes to downtown Edinburgh, keep your mask on. Because that's probably where we got it. The U.S. Travel Association believes mask wearing should be up to each traveler, but they also say that this is something that really it's maybe your choice, but be a sensible person. It's because it means it's your choice doesn't mean you have to do the dumb thing. So Centers for Disease Control and Protection and the World Health Organization have said that cases around the globe rose by about 30% between June 24 and July 21. Simply put, there's a lot of COVID out there.
There's also sloth fever.
Oh, yeah, I got
it's,
that.
It's the, sloth, it's the mysterious sloth virus.
Oh, no, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sad.
Yeah, it's a virus.
Once takes them a long time to get over it.
Once confined. All right. I want you to walk 3 inches every day.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
got to get some exercise.
Yeah.
That's what you were doing, right? That was your daily exercise.
Pretty much, yeah. So I feel like I've slothed this last month here since I had my knee surgery. But I'm doing better. I got rid of my giant giant knee brace.
Excellent.
It was essentially like a log with some Velcro on it.
Nice.
So I got rid of that yesterday. So it's very.
Are you able to bike or do anything?
No,
else
not
like
yet.
That?
Okay. I mean, stationary bike, but I can't really do a whole lot yet. But but I can, you know, I can. I'm more a little more functional and go up and down stairs.
Can you kick out the jams?
I cannot kick out. I can't kick anything.
Hey, are we doing the Willie Street Fair this year?
I don't know.
I think we missed the Orton Park Fair.
We did miss the Orton Park. I don't know. I'll have to see if I'm
up for it.
Sorry. I don't know. Anyway.
Keep going.
Oh, I don't know. It's just I just thought the name was funny, but of course it's not funny. It's a virus once confined in the Amazon, it's now spreading more widely around the Americas.
Oh dear.
It underwent some genetic changes that may make it more potent. It was a largely unknown disease until about. Sometime late last year, then the virus has been spreading. They found more than 8,000 cases of the disease, and it's a virus that was in South America and can cause a feverish disease in humans, but also found in howler monkeys, like most of our listeners, and marmosets and sloths, along with again. Speaking of our listeners, and along with a number of bunch
you're,
of bunch
you're
of
really
innocents.
Prepping us for the next pledge drive, aren't you?
You sloths and howler monkeys out there.
Uh-oh. Some howler monkeys calling. Oh, dear. I just want to mention, by the way, while we're talking about this, that Anthony Fauci is recovering from West Nile virus right now. Full recovery is expected, but not very nice. And I should also mention to you that right now equine encephalitis is all over Massachusetts. 10 counties in Massachusetts have warned people to stay indoors from dusk to dawn. And it's because there's a mosquito-borne virus, Eastern equine encephalitis. It's very rare, but of course, it's becoming less rare, like so many of these things. This is a very bad year, apparently, for this particular virus, and it affects not only the East Coast, but areas around the Great Lakes. And that's us, by the way, in case you're curious. As of Tuesday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had reported 4 human cases in Wisconsin, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Vermont. And, you know, I think I told you that I had a severe mosquito. Did I tell you about that? I had a severe mosquito attack. When we came back from our travels, apparently it was the storm or the sun or something, but there was a little warp in our screen in the bedroom in the Smarty Cave, and mosquitoes were coming in, and I didn't even realize it, and one like bit me on the hand, and I thought, well, I'll just get under the sheets because it's the middle of the night, and pulled it up around my neck, but I had my big fat head out of the sheets. And the mosquitoes came in and said, hey, look at that big fat head. Went over. And I had 12 mosquito bites on the side of my face that wasn't on the pillow. And they swelled up like welts. And I swear to goodness, it looked like I had buboes, you know, like the bubonic plague or something. I mean, it was really awful.
Wow.
And not only that, but I had such a severe histamine response that now everything that bites me, it reactivates all the other ones. So when I saw that about the encephalitis, I thought, oh, that's not good.
No.
So I'm hoping I will not have Eastern equine encephalitis. Yeah. So.
Oh, mosquitoes love you, though.
They do. They do love me. It's true.
A lot of insects,
I have grade A blood.
Yeah. This is the EPA offices in Chicago. They found Legionella bacteria and lead.
We're the all bacteria.
And lead in the drinking water of the EPA's offices in Chicago.
Wah, wah. Bureau of Ironic Punishments.
Heck of a job, Brownie.
Yeah, Brownie. Yeah, exactly. That's a callback. In February, Google faced a backlash from users who realized that its AI chatbot, Gemini, was unable to reliably create images of white people. That cracked me up. Wednesday this week, Google began turning the feature back on for users who pay to use the English language version of the chatbot Gemini Advanced because they've got a redo. The company said it would incorporate the latest version of its image generator, Imogen 3, into the chatbot. So according to Dave Citrund, the Google senior director, with Imagen 3, we've made significant progress in providing a better user experience with generating images of people. So people, it's all about the people.
Yeah.
Soylent Green, it's all about the people.
To serve man.
Yes.
So in Australia, they've got people, speaking of people.
Yeah. They're all over the place.
Sometimes.
Billions of them.
Not too many in some parts
Australia.
Of it.
Okay.
But sometimes people don't like these big trees blocking their view.
Okay. You know,
especially like when they're in a nice ritzy house or something,
yeah.
and they want to, you know, look over and
survey their empire.
Survey the empire.
Yeah, exactly.
And so sometimes they'll, a lot of Australia is a nature preserve.
Oh.
And so they'll cut down these trees because they want a better view.
Sure.
And if the Australian government finds out that they did that,
okay,
they put up a giant billboard where the tree used to be, and it says, "This vegetation has been illegally vandalized."
Oh my gosh. So, and it's really hard to see around a giant billboard.
I know. You thought the tree was bad.
Oh man.
I just love that. That's great.
That's great, yeah. Got another orca story. Orcas are on the move. They've struck again. This time ramming a sailboat, off the coast of Spain. That's according to rescue workers. This happened Tuesday of this week. A pod of orcas damaged the rudder. And they just came up and kind of smacked it a few times. This is the latest of a string of attacks by pods of orcas that are swimming around the Iberian Peninsula. The sailboat did not sink. By the way, the sailboat's name is the Amidala, in case you're curious. Researchers don't know what's going on with the orcas. They don't know if it's playful or malicious. It's just another, like, one of these things that young orcas do to show off or something. I don't know. The sailboat's damaged rudder and poor weather conditions made the rescue very arduous. The waves were big and the people on the sailboat were not very happy. But they were from Belgium, and, you know, orcas have a well-known distaste for the Belgians, so... I think. I'm just speculating. I'm randomly speculating. I should go on Fox, actually.
I heard this.
Yeah. Again, they don't have any really definitive explanation for why the orcas are doing this, but they all seem to be doing it. And they may be just having some fun, you know, kind of Donald Trump style fun.
They are kind of playful animals.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and they're big, and they don't get that they maybe are
right.
doing things they
it's
ought
like
not.
If you have a big dog that jumps in your lap or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, like, ow, I'll never have children.
That brings me to our next story.
I'll never have children?
No, well, sort of. Antidepressant pollution is rewiring fish behavior and reproduction.
Oh, Lord.
All of the antidepressants people
yeah.
have that ends up in the wastewater
yeah.
ends up in, like, the fish water, the water where the fish
right.
live. And fish are being affected by
sure.
all these antidepressants.
Fish are sitting there going, I'm finally my best self.
But I'm getting so fat.
Exactly.
But it's affecting like it's affecting the way their brain is wired, and they're not quite sure what's going on. But
I'm just gonna say, oh Lord!
But also it's affecting their sperm count of the
I assume it's going down.
Fishies, it's going down.
Yeah.
So it could have a negative effect on the reproduction.
Sure.
Yeah, because I mean, in humans, that sometimes can depress your sex drive. So
sure.
Probably does the same thing with goldfish. I don't
yeah.
know.
But, yeah.
So it's just weird that you know, this how this ecosystem works, that we take these things to feel better, and then we pee them out, and
yeah.
then the poor fish is like, ah.
A few years ago, hearing that we have like the most vitamin-rich sewage of any country in the world. I've never been on antidepressants, and I'm lucky that way, I guess. I did at one point in time think, well, you know, I was going through a period, and they prescribed St. John's wort in Europe, actually, as a very mild antidepressant.
Sure. Yeah.
And so you can get that over the counter. I thought, well, I'll just try it, see if it... It made me kind of briggity, as we say down south. It's kind of like mouthier, if you can imagine
really?
That. Oh, yeah. But it also affected something else. And I thought, you know, this trade-off is not a good one. So I'm more depressed now.
Here's a story just for you. South Korea deploys sniffer dogs at airports to detect bed bugs after the Paris Olympics.
Oh, excellent.
So they've got a picture of a beagle here.
Oh, yeah.
Keiko is screening travelers returning from Paris. This story is a little old, but I thought it was still pretty good.
That's really...
After the Paris had an outbreak of bed bugs last year. So,
of course,
so South Korea has dogs sniffing your luggage now.
I love it.
Need that on the buses here, I think.
But, you know, I have never been to Korea, but I actually hearing that makes me want to go. They're taking care of the bed bugs. All right. That's my kind of people. I'm not going to just let you bring any old bed bugs in there.
Exactly.
So here's a story again that I feel like it was I felt like I was reading the news feeds this week, and this was news you could use. I told you I had all those mosquito bites, and there was an article in the New York Times about what to do if you get a mosquito bite. And of course, we all know why. You know, there are proteins that they release with their saliva along with a lot of other stuff, and you have a histamine reaction. I did not know. This was fascinating. Is that the reason why when you scratch it, it feels better is not because it actually feels better. It's because you induce a mild pain when you scratch it. And then what happens is your body releases serotonin, which is a natural pain reliever. So the problem is the serotonin can also amplify the itch signals. And those of you who are in the itch scratch cycle know exactly what this is all about. But that's the underlying chemistry of it. And that, of course, makes you scratch more. But apparently, if you put an ice pack on there, and again, you may be getting more mosquito bites. And we just had a nice little rain last night. Ice pack, cooling spray, or even a menthol ointment. And I did not realize this, but Vicks VapoRub, if you put that on a mosquito bite, it will alleviate some of the itchy feeling. Of course, hydrocortisone, which you can get over the counter, is also good. A cold washcloth could also provide some relief, as long as you don't make too much friction when you do it. So...
So here's a study that says that whether your grandparents went to college or not can affect your real age, like your biological age.
Really?
Yeah, that if your parents or grandparents went to college, you'll tend to have a lower real age than your chronological age.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. So that's carries through from generation to generation.
We're all doomed.
Yeah. Well, you and I are. My paternal grandfather was a bigamist. So. Yeah.
Was that his professional occupation?
No, it was listed it on his tax returns.
Well, you know, it keeps a person busy. I mean, you know.
It was a full-time job,
it was a full-time
job.
Yeah.
Oh, so.
When we were at Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts, just before we came back from our vacation, I did go to the Natural History Museum there. And the parts that I liked the best were everything about insects, because I love insects are fascinating. And then, of course, the dinosaurs. Everybody loves the dinosaur section. And I was reading all about the meteorite, you know, the famous meteorite that led to the worldwide calamity that led to one of the major extinctions, of course, in the history of our planet. And they've done one of the things that they realized it was from space is that you probably know this. There was a layer of iridium, which is an unusual element on Earth, but it's related to platinum. But it's not that unusual, apparently, in meteorites. Well, they found that so there's a layer of that happened mm-hmm. was spread across the Earth around that time, which would be hard to explain without something like that. But there's a new study out. By a team of scientists led by someone named Mario Fischer-Goethe, who is a research scientist at the University of Cologne in Germany. And they've discovered that in addition to iridium, another rare element, ruthenium, is all over the place as a result of the famous 6-mile-wide impact that created this this extinction event. And ruthenium is abundant in asteroids, but extremely rare on Earth. So rather than a meteorite, just like a sort of chunk, it may have been actually an asteroid. They think from the asteroid belt itself, the belt of fairly largest rocky things that exist between Mars and Jupiter. And the ruthenium isotope is pretty much a proof positive, sort of the nail in the coffin, that that the meteorite that hit the Earth could not be anything other than a carbonaceous asteroid.
Wow.
So there's so little ruthenium apparently on the Earth that the fact that there's any at all is kind of associated with the asteroid is kind of surprising. So it's probably something that was, who knows what was going on, flying around out there and ran into something else and something attracted it.
Some UFO. Tractor beam.
Bob's your uncle. Yeah, tractor beams. That's what I thought it probably was. I always go for the simplest explanation.
How do I shut this thing off? Oh, never mind. So, researchers have found that while aging typically leads to declines in various memory functions, the ability to recognize and recall music may remain relatively intact, even when hearing new pieces for the first time.
So, oh, really? Even new stuff? Now, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised that you remember the old stuff.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But even new stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising. But the music is weird on our brains. Yes. It's just, when you think about it, it's like, what is going on?
It's processed totally differently.
Yeah, yeah, and most people, you know, like it so much.
Yes.
I mean, it's so pleasurable. It's like candy for your brain,
right,
kind
yeah.
of. And it's like, what's going on there?
A good example of that is that sometimes people who have speech impediments or speech deficiencies can actually sing
sure.
without that that happening at all. So obviously it's being processed in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're learning lessons from our MAGA Republicans. They're learning them there in the United Kingdom. English fox hunters are trying to push back on a ban, a nearly 20-year-old ban on fox hunting in the United Kingdom. And they've got a new tactic. And it sounds, if it sounds familiar to you, well, it's because it is. Ed Swales, an activist with a group called Hunting Kind, it's a lobby group that aims to protect hunting with dogs and their form of hunting, wants to use Britain's Equality Act, which protects people from discrimination because of their age, race, sexuality, religion, to classify pro-hunting as a protected belief.
Okay.
I mean, this is the whole history of the contemporary Republican Party, right? It's like, no, we're the real oppressed people, you know? Yeah, yeah, you are. So it would put it in a legal category, along with these other things. This Mr. Swales, he's 55, a dangerous age, said he was prepared to bring a series of anti-discrimination lawsuits in the hope of setting a legal precedent that could eventually help reverse the fox hunting ban. And not to be outdone, the Serial Killers Union of Britain also said,
it's just the way we are.
Yeah, right? You know, it involves killing things.
Yeah, so... You know, when I was growing up in the white trash world that I grew up in, so when the adults a lot of times...
I wish our trash was white.
Yeah. when a lot of times adults would get in arguments,
yeah.
you know, and usually when they've been drinking, which yeah. is, you know, kind of goes without saying, but,
yeah, yeah.
but it would always break down to somebody screaming, I'm going to sue you for defamation of character. It was like the one thing they had in their brain, that their little legal trick. And it's kind of like that, too. It's like,
yeah.
it's like I'm going to sue you for this discrimination against me yeah. because I like to go fox hunting.
I was once overheard. No one ever said that to me, but I overheard someone say that to someone else, is that they were going to sue them for deformation of character. And I was about 17. I thought, I think that's already been done. It's already deformed enough.
I like that. Oh, we got about a minute left here. Heat-related deaths
in
the U.S. have been steadily increasing for years.
Yep.
117% increase. That's yeah. almost as much as the jobs that the illegals are stealing.
Yeah, yeah.
In 117% increase in heat-related deaths from 1999 to 2023, with at least 21,000 people dying in that period.
Yeah. I got another one. You want to also end on a sad note?
Sure.
You know, these Canadian boreal forests, which produce these wildfires and wildfires. Yeah. Only China, the U.S., and India have produced more emissions than those from fossil fuels than those Canadian fires. It's according to a study that was published in Nature. So now Canada, because of this, is a major contributor to, to climate change.
I was up in northern Wisconsin, what, 2 or 3 years ago when they had those really bad fires in Canada, and the air was terrible. I mean, it was just sooty. So.
Yeah.
All right, time to get out of here. Time to declare the weekend. It's a long weekend, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Enjoy your long weekend, everybody.
See, I think we should rename Labor Day as just day because there should be no labor going on.
Yeah, that always confused me as a kid. It's like, what, you don't work and it's Labor Day? I mean, it's like...
I told people when I was a kid, because my birthday falls around there sometimes. Yeah. It did 1 year.
Yeah.
Told people that it was my birthday and they said, why is it called Labor Day? It's because my mother was in labor.
Oh, very good.
I was six. What did
I know? That's pretty good. That's a good joke.
I kind of half believed it, too.
That's a good joke for a six-year-old.
You know, when you're a kid, you kind of half believe stuff like that.
Oh, sure. So, all right, we got to get out of here. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with Real Jaguar? Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio. Pants, was great to see you. Have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening. It's 2 o'clock. You are listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. And again, thanks for listening. And stick around. The Kiosk is coming right up. Right on!
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, August 30th.
This is Bird Note. For birds, learning starts early. Birds listen to their parents' songs and calls from inside the egg. Recent findings have shown that calls from zebra finch parents can even prepare their chicks for warmer temperatures before they hatch. Researchers noticed that zebra finches make a special high-pitched call, called a heat call, when sitting on their eggs and temperatures rise above 84 degrees. After chicks inside the egg have heard a parent making these heat calls, it has a profound effect on them, down to the cellular level. They metabolize energy differently, perhaps to reduce the amount of damage to their bodies caused by heat. Once out of the egg, these chicks grow more slowly in the heat. As adults, they seek out warmer spots for their nests and even produce more offspring of their own than finches that didn't slow.